Good Monday morning, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. We got a lot to get to today because it was a very busy weekend, and we had a very busy pre-show meeting doing all kinds of interesting research.
Yes, we did. And what's interesting, this is the last week of Golic and Wingo, and we're doing our last show on Friday, and I wonder if baseball will make it that far the way it's going right now. I mean, we've got live sports finally to talk about in a few different sports. But boy, there is some trepidation along the ways with positive tests and injuries going on.
Yeah, it is the excitement of opening day that came last week. And I think just the general, oh, wow, this feels good of seeing live sports back in a bunch of different fashions this weekend. We have the WNBA back this season, tipping off on Saturday, Premier Lacrosse, all this stuff. And it is slowly being replaced by the sinking dread that is looking out at the one non-bubble sport and going, okay, this is going about as poorly as you could have unfortunately imagined at the beginning.
Correct. And we'll get to that part of it in a second. But there's another part of what's going on in baseball that is just, it makes you wonder if we gave people enough ramp-up time. Because one thing we learned over the first weekend of Major League Baseball, pitchers are going down and going down in bunches.
Well, you know, we've talked about this a lot, and, you know, we'd get people to come on and say, well, you know, these are pro athletes, they don't know how to take care of themselves. And because we asked this in every sport. We always said, what's going to be that injury? What's it going to be in basketball? What's it going to be in baseball? What's it going to be in football coming up, which we'll get to. And, oh, boy, has it hit in baseball, starting from opening night when Clayton Kershaw was scratched with a stiff back last Thursday. He tweaked it last Tuesday and ended up not starting on Thursday. Now we go with Steven Strasburg. He misses his start with a hand.
A nerve issue in his hand.
We have Corey Kluber for the Rangers.
He threw one inning,
and he has a tight shoulder. You have Shohei Ohtani. It wasn't an injury, but he's coming back from an injury. Absolutely getting shelled.
Record a single out.
Not one in 30 pitches. Then you have Justin Verlander, who threw six innings, who actually threw in the game, did pretty well throwing in the game. And then afterward had the stiff forearm, and there were reports at first that he might be out for the season. Doesn't look like it's
going to be. I was going to say, we were sitting together yesterday, and the way different apps and different outlets will send out a push notification, when a story comes out, it was Justin Verlander out for the year at first with an elbow injury. Yeah. And then obviously everyone's come out since then, Dusty Baker and others, you know, refuting those reports, saying that it's a forearm injury, saying they're just shutting him down right now as a precaution.
Right. It was a Houston Chronicle article. Justin Verlander said that's not accurate. I'm going to give it a little rest. And then obviously Dusty Baker was asked about it. Here was Dusty after the game.
You know, we know it's a forearm strain, and he's being seen by the doctor, so he'll probably be shut down for a couple of weeks, and then we'll see from there.
Will he pitch for you this season?
Well, like I said, I just said he shut down for a couple of weeks, and then we'll, reevaluate it from there. We don't know.
When did it happen?
It happened yesterday, early in the game, but he said he felt, he felt fine. And you see he was throwing the ball great yesterday, and it was kind of a shock to all of us.
That's the thing about it. He was throwing the ball well, go six innings, not like Kluber comes out after the first inning, or Kershaw that never makes it there, or Strasburger never makes it to his start. This had to be a stunner. And then initially to think, oh my God, the season, which of course is just a couple of months this year, but even you're talking 2 weeks, just maybe 2 weeks, maybe on the short side of possibly 2 weeks. As we said, any injury that goes, for 2 weeks to a month or so, I mean, you get to a month, you're talking half the season. Now you're talking a team that's got a great shot, obviously, at the postseason, but I mean, all this stuff, and when it heals, because you don't know about Kluber in the shoulder, we don't know about Kershaw in the back, we don't know about Strasburg in the hand, and we don't know about Verlander and his forearm. So, I mean, this is what a horror, forgetting even the virus, which we'll get to.
Right.
I mean, these are some top pitchers already right out of the gate.
Well, the other thing, too, Verlander has just been a workhorse. I mean, there's a lot of innings in that arm. No one has thrown more pitches, innings, or faced more batters than Verlander since he debuted in 2005. Over almost 49,000 pitches, over 12,000 batters faced, and almost 3,000 innings pitched. So we're talking about someone who has had a lot of stress on that. And you hear forearm stiffness, and you think, oh, okay, well, it's just something here. That's not always the way. You know, you talk about it when you have an injury in your knee. Sometimes you're compensating with different things and your hammy goes and all that kind of stuff. Well, Jeff Passan breaks down exactly what this means when you hear someone who's had that kind of durability and that kind of pitching stamina over all these years and what forearm stiffness really might mean instead of just the forearm.
Anytime you hear the words forearm strain, it goes right back to the elbow because the muscles that are in the forearm, the flexor pronator and three other muscles in there, are connected to the elbow ligaments. And, well, those things tend not to go well when you have a forearm strain. Now, that being said, a forearm strain itself does not mean that Justin Verlander is going to need Tommy John surgery or that he's going to need surgery at all. Typically, they'll give it a couple of weeks rest to see what the elbow looks like and what the muscles in the forearm look like, and then reassess there whether it's prophylactic treatment like a platelet-rich plasma injection or stem cells or something along those lines. You gotta wait and see how the injury heals over these next couple of weeks before you figure out how to treat it and what the course of action is.
So in other words, when just understand that it could be something much more significant. We don't know for sure yet, but for someone that's worked that many innings at the age of 37, it's obviously not something that is very promising at this point.
Yeah, there are major concerns associated with it. And like Dad said, all of this goes back to the idea that you have disrupted their normal routine with this stuff. And even being pros, and that's always the difference that we've said, is in the professional ranks, you can expect, because of the salaries and because of the way this is structured, them to go about and operate with their best interest and the league's best interest in mind in a way that college players, it's harder to legislate with. This is troubling. Like, this is part one of the two-part baseball, oh my God, thing that we're going to do to start the show here, which is you're having the worst version of this, which is injury being a result of what we'd imagined the shortened ramp up to this season.
Oh, without question. And then these are obviously, you talk about guys like Strasburg, like Clayton Kluber. Kershaw and Verlander, really, depending on what Texas does, teams that are looking at the postseason. Yes. Now, it is expanded, so we'll see. But, I mean, teams that are expected to not only be in the postseason, but do damage in the postseason. I mean, you want to really talk about taking, you know, where's that line of making sure they're ready for the postseason and making sure with 16 teams you're probably going to make the postseason. It's over half the teams getting in, and not matter where you are, just get to it and make sure they're right, provided they can come back, because you're already talking about missing a few more starts.
Yeah, and I guess that's the tough part, is baseball's long season used to be the advantage for stuff like this. Is all right, you could afford to be overly cautious in these situations to say we're just going to get this right. It's the course of a long season. It is a 60-game sprint now, and so it's going to stress all of the parts in this situation. And for these guys, does the thing in the back of your mind start to rattle around and say, for this shortened season, am I really going to go out there and tax this in the way that's going to be asked of me, coming off of being shut down like Verlander, being put on ice for that first start like Kershaw? Like, am I willing to potentially throw myself into a more severe injury for a championship that's already going to be a crapshoot over this shortened season?
You know, understand too, we're already in the part of the season that's past the All-Star break from the normal season. So anybody gets that long-term injury now, they're into next year.
Correct.
You know, they're into the, if everything goes right next year and you start everything on time, you are already at that point.
Right. And so these are all problematic, as you said, in a 60-game season. But then there's the reason we're having a 60-game season. And that is also rearing its ugly head in Major League Baseball. And we'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2.
Man. That has not changed either. No. They have only deepened. I use
confirmed.
I use a lovely face cream now, though. That
does
has
that
really started to put a bit of a dent into it. Like, don't get me wrong, we're working against time.
Hey, if you think it's working for you, it's working for you, and that's all that matters.
It better be working for how much I paid for this damn face cream.
Golic and Wingo with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. Our guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So we started the show talking about the spate of arm injuries in baseball in this shortened season and the shortened ramp up to the season, more importantly, probably leading to that. But all of that is because of what everybody in this country and quite frankly across the world is still dealing with, and that's the pandemic from the coronavirus. And this has also reared its ugly head in baseball because multiple Marlins players have tested positive for COVID-19, thus delaying the team's trip home. And you begin to wonder, as it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, is this going to work out over the long term? Because we're seeing these tests pop up rather quickly here, and the Marlins are really right now sort of in no man's land.
Well, four players in this, and you mentioned they delayed their flight home, and the reason they did it, they said, was for the families involved. Because remember, this isn't a bubble, so when these players go home back to their home city, they're going home to their families. So because there were four players on the team who had tested positive, they didn't want to fly everybody home and disperse them to their family. So they're going to fly in and land a couple hours before their game today and stay together as a group until more results come back for some of these players. But, you know, this brings up the question we've asked everybody. We've asked every single person about this in all their memos and, you know, books and guidelines and procedures is there a number? Yeah. Is there a number? And, you know, we don't have a number for anybody. And I kind of understand not having a number, but we're getting to the point now of, are we getting close to a number, whatever number that is?
Well, and we've had a couple of instances now that have been concerning this, where whether it's a player that tests positive around a scrimmage, everything that happened with Juan Soto leading up to the Nats opener on this one, Matt Davidson, the Reds infielder, tested positive the day after playing in a game. Like, all of these things where exposure is the concern right now, and for the Marlins, just having it be a team who lives in a hotbed through all of this, and a team who had multiple players test positive and all this, makes it extremely difficult to try and feel like you've got a handle on any of this.
You mentioned Davidson, and also Moustakas from that team felt ill, and they kept him home. Center fielder Nick Senzel was a late scratch from Cincinnati's lineup Sunday against Detroit. So, yeah, you're really starting to wonder a little bit as, with a sport outside the bubble, and they're outside the bubble like the NFL is going to be, you wonder if this is kind of a precursor to what we may see.
Right. Buster Olney gave us his prediction was a 5% chance they start the season. They got that, and 0% chance that they make it to a World Series. I'm not sure if we're at the 0% threshold yet, but Jeff Passan, again, explaining the problems because of what we're seeing with the Marlins.
There's no protocol in place, and teams are understandably fearful of an outbreak like the one that has happened with the Miami Marlins. And they're simply hopeful at this point that it's contained to the four players whose names were not announced, but who we reported earlier today had tested positive for COVID-19. This is the sort of thing that can torpedo a baseball season. If there is an outbreak that goes beyond four players, at what point, it's like Don Mattingly said, do you start having a team that can't be competitive? Is it when there are five guys out? Is it seven? Is it 10? That's what Major League Baseball needs to come in and determine. And while I don't think just one team having an outbreak would be the sort of thing that would cause the season to get shut down or at least paused, there has to be consideration, if there are outbreaks in other places, what the type of season they want to have actually is. Because a lot of this is happening as teams start traveling, as opposed to them sticking around at their homes as they had been in recent weeks during training camp.
Okay, considering it started game one between the Nats and the Yankees with Soto being out, then many more tests over this weekend, where is your level of certainty that we're going to get to a postseason, let alone anything else?
Well, I mean, it can't be good, right? Yeah. I mean, it can't be. And remember, it was basketball that was testing every day. Football, again, they're going to, for the first 2 weeks, test every day. And if the positive rate is below 5%, they'll go to every other day. If not, they'll keep doing every day. Baseball had been every other day. You wonder if that's going to need to change, you know, and start going every day.
Well, and that's been the difficulty, the timing of getting the test results back. Right, and that was what came up with Juan Soto. So that becomes a difficult part. And the fact that now I don't think it's just, well, you test positive and then you come back, because we saw what happened with Eduardo Rodriguez in the Red Sox is something that I think a lot of guys are going to start to keep their eyes on, because he's been shut down for at least a week now because of heart inflammation that it's been said was a result of his bout with COVID-19 and all of this. It's I'm trying to look up the term right here. Myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart muscle, and he confirmed, I think it was originally a WEEI report, that was connected to COVID-19, and this happened in the Premier Lacrosse League over the weekend. A player, Jules Enenberg, didn't go to the PLL bubble because of dealing with something similar like this, where thankfully they catch this thing where if you are, and you've heard about this to some extent with some of the COVID protocol coming back from this, is you slow the ramp up of activity because something like this is possible. This is a young guy in a league where we talked about, well, these guys are less susceptible to something we don't fully understand. understand yet. And while it might not be the severity of death and a ventilator and all these things that pop up as the visual in this situation, for these young athletes still in the prime of their career, things popping up like this are a real reminder that we don't know all the stakes yet involved in all this one. And when you hear, and we know this is how it always operates with athletes, you can talk about ACLs, broken this, broken right. that, but the minute you start to go inside the cage here and go after internal organs, there's always, we remember this happened with Andrew Luck with all the stuff that he dealt with, and certainly, God, you go to the heart, and all of a sudden, it's a completely different bag.
That's the thing, when people talk, well, the death rate isn't this. That doesn't mean that's the only bad thing that happens from this thing. People tend to sort of just gloss over, did he die or did he not die? Oh, okay, then it's not a big deal. There are way more levels to this, and we're finding this out in what seems to be a younger population, healthy, athletic, young men.
So, and it's a one-person sample size. Right, I understand that, but if you are another player around Major League Baseball looking around and saying, all right, we're seeing guys test positive, and I know this is a possibility now, that specter of doubt can't help but creep in your head, and that's understandable considering all the things that we are still finding out and all the things these players are certainly still finding out.
So as far as the positive tests, we're seeing multiple positive tests on team. So that, again, is going to bring up the question of when is – does it hit the amount where we shut things down or that team down? That we still don't know. Baseball's ready with their taxi squad. They have a large taxi squad so they can pull players from it. So the process will play out. If these players need to be out for a while, they have people to fill the void. And then can you stop the spread?
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be the next thing. Okay, you found these guys are positive. You isolate them for X amount of time until we get we all know the routine by now, two negatives.
I was going to say, Major League Baseball, you're isolated until you have two negatives at least 24 hours apart and show no symptoms for 72 hours and receive approval from team doctors.
So we're going to find out how well the process works from stopping the spread. They go to quarantine, other players come in. And here we go. So this is in the guidelines. This is in the protocol. How is it followed? Do these players come back? And we got to see how the process works and plays out a little bit.
And again, this isn't a sport where you could, ostensibly, play an entire game without touching another human being.
Yeah.
And then there's football.
Yep.
Which is just trying to begin with training camps and people reporting, the rookies reporting this week.
A whole lot of agreement going on there to different scenarios as well that we'll get into.
But you can't not touch someone for a single play in that sport. And all of that is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Speaking of football, a turbulent offseason has finally ended with a happy ending for one player, and we'll get to that. Well, that's always the question in a trade. Is it worth what you got, or is it worth what you gave up? Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, including our next guest, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, and that's our front office insider, Mike Tannenbaum, who joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on sequence 4A wear testing using SAE5W30. All that being said, Mike Tannenbaum joins us now. So, Mike, you are... now the New York Jets, you are now the general manager. You are now Joe Douglas. And you have sent away your best player, arguably, in Jamal Adams. But in return, you get a starter that's going to take his place in Bradley McDougal, a first-round pick in 2021 and 2022, and a third-round pick in 2021, and you give up Adams and a fourth-round pick. If you're Joe Douglas, that's a pretty good deal, don't you think?
I think it's a pretty good deal, and I'm happy about the flexibility I have moving forward, guys. I actually have a pretty underrated safety situation because you mentioned McDougal. They have Marcus May, and they drafted a really intriguing player in Ashton Davis from the University of California. So,
correct.
From an actually on-the-field standpoint, I like that. Here are my two concerns. First of all, these are probably going to be lower-round picks, and when you think about first-round picks, that is, if you think about some of their recent sort of Seattle, where they've picked, they've added Rashad Penny, LJ Collier, Afedi, certainly guys that have had mixed results at best. So there's no certainty, you know, barring something unforeseen, because they have Russell Wilson, we're not talking about top 10 picks. And the other fundamental concern I would have, guys, is a tremendous intangibles. And I've had the privilege of both sitting in the seat in Miami and New York, which is when a player finds a pathway to get out of a situation, and that situation would be due to play time, money, doesn't like a coach, and they can kick and scream their way out, which is what Jamal Adams just did. They have now created a blueprint, and you just hope, if I'm Joe Douglas, that I don't open up Pandora's box here and start a terrible precedent.
And oh, by the way, their precedent of their first-round draft picks haven't been great as of late either. So
Jamal was the best. Yeah,
that's exactly right. All right, how about on the Seattle side of it?
Yeah, I really like it from a scheme standpoint. When we think about those great Seattle defenses, guys, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, they're going to play the Jamal Adams strength, which is close to the line of scrimmage. He's very productive as a blitzer, over 10 career sacks as a safety, which is really rare, so I like it. However, I think they made a huge mistake over the weekend, which is it's the next example of a team giving up multiple first-round picks and not agreeing to an extension. So when the Houston Texans traded for Laremy Tunsil with the Miami Dolphins and gave up two first-round picks and didn't sign him to an extension, it literally cost them $4 to $5 million a year when they did sign Tunsil. The Rams gave Jalen Ramsey a blank check. They gave up two first-round picks to the Jaguars, no extension. You're giving players massive amounts of leverage. And when we think about the highest-paid safety in Eddie Jackson at $14.6 million a year, Jamal Adams will laugh at that number. So I like it for a number of reasons for Seattle, certainly short-term, but there's going to be a massive contract at some point.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here on Golic and Wingo. Mike, looking back at the Jet side of things here, I mean, would it have been any less destructive to what the Jets are doing there to keep a guy who was clearly that disgruntled, who had said the things he did about your coach and front office around, as opposed to trying to maximize value for him?
You know, Mike, that's a totally fair point. And I guess, unfortunately, I can answer this question with a rare amount of expertise. I sat in that seat. I had Darrelle Revis hold out. He was really upset with me and the fact that we weren't giving him an extension. And I always just try to make it about the facts and work really, really hard to get a solution. And it was tough for Joe Douglas, candidly, because, you know, Joe inherited Jamal Adams. He didn't draft him. There wasn't, you know, some sort of foundation of a relationship. And I understand why they did it. And again, I think where Joe Douglas deserves a ton of credit is he maximized the value of the player, despite the fact that everybody knew he didn't want to be there, which is hard to do. So I can understand why they did it. And again, they'll be okay at safety. But if you just walk around saying, hey, we just got to get rid of any headache today and not work hard to solve problems, it's just my concern for them is you just hope this is not the last time this happens.
Mike Tannenbaum with us, our NFL front office insider. So before we move on to the litany of other things we need to talk about in the NFL, how important now is it for this Jets power duo of Joe Douglas and Adam Gase to make sure that they continue the success they had at the end of last season when Sam Darnold came back and they won a bunch of games? Because you're right, people will gripe and they'll say, look what happened here, we lost our best player, and people are upset about it. But you know what cures all of that? Winning. How important is it for Douglas and Gase to make sure the Jets get off to a good start now?
Yeah, and in this case, winning is number one, but I would say 1A is the trajectory of Sam Darnold's career, because let's face it, if they go 7-9 and Sam Darnold throws for 5,000 yards and, you know, 40 touchdowns and two interceptions, I think things will look great. Likewise, if they go 9-7 and Sam Darnold's bench, you know, that could be a different conversation. So I think when they hired Adam Gase, someone I had a chance to work with in Miami, it was clear it was to develop Sam Darnold. So I think it's consequential how well he plays for the future of that program. And I think they've done a nice job of addressing the offensive line, trying to get more weapons. I think Chris Herndon coming back is very underrated. So I think that offense has a chance to be much better than last year, where just through injury and illnesses, they had a revolving door at quarterback. And if they could at least establish Darnold as a good NFL starter, I think that will go a long way to calming down the noise.
Mike, let me throw this one at you here. I kind of thought about this as I saw Jamal going to Seattle in that secondary. We know what that secondary was. And we know that Pete Carroll, for those maybe that don't, Pete Carroll has been a secondary coach before he was a defensive coordinator, before he was a head coach. And that legion of boom, now Earl Thomas was a first-rounder, but Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor were fifth-round picks. Byron Maxwell was a sixth-rounder. Brandon Browner was undrafted. So I guess my point is they find ways to not have to pay big money and had excellent guys on defense. You're going to have to make this guy by far the highest paid safety in the league. Did you need to do that with the way that Pete Carroll can coach that defense and that secondary?
Yeah, Mike, I think it's a really fair point, but here's the going behind the curtain. Here's a conversation they're having. Hey, we got to beat San Francisco. It's really close. There is no way in the world, based on where we've been drafting, that we would get a player anywhere close to Jamal Adams, and we're going to have to pay a big premium. But if he could go cover George Kittle, if he could, you know, help slow down that 49er offense, it's worth it. And we do. We have to continue to draft and develop, you know, some other guys. And some of their players back there, you know, that's certainly going to be the case. They're not all first-rounders. Like Marquise Blair was a second-rounder. Trey Flowers was a fifth-rounder. Your point is well taken, but I think Jamal Adams is looked upon much more as just a playmaker because he really is an unusual player. You almost say he's a little bit of a linebacker. So their draft and development in the lower rounds has been a huge, huge part of their success, especially given, you know, how much Russell Wilson now makes.
Mike, I'm curious from a big picture sense in the NFL now, as we look at a lot of the things that were agreed upon over the weekend between the league and the players, how concerned are you looking at what's happening in baseball right now, the other major sport that's not going to exist in a bubble?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you think about the privileges of these jobs, and now you're worrying about, like, where your players are eating and, you know, can they order food from certain establishments or not. And I thought the rules that the league and the union came up with over the weekend made a ton of sense. Like, we're all trying to get the right result in a weird situation and trying to make sure players don't go to certain establishments. It makes a ton of sense. And I think what we saw in baseball going on with the Marlins, for example, it's going to happen. We've talked about this a lot. People are going to test positive. And I've heard from a number of teams that they're going to have practices where it's going to be their second play caller. Their head coach won't go to practice for a day just so they can get used to different situations. And I think, over the next few months, guys, the narrative is going to be like, wow, you know, Matt Ryan's out for Atlanta or Carson Wentz is out for Philadelphia. And we're just going to see weird and unusual things happen. And I think it's going to be in football with coaches as well. Just it's the reality of the situation. And we're going to learn a lot. And it's going to be a very unusual year, I think, on a lot of different levels.
Well, unusual might be the nicest way to put what we may be seeing. And then there's, Mike, the practicality of what we're talking about. Look, we're all doing this, and the NFL's doing everything they can to make sure they get to week one and start the season with that Thursday night game between the Chiefs and the Texans with the COVID situation. But then we're only talking about, what, 14 padded practices before we start the season? For just the idea of getting people ready to play football, is that enough?
No, and when you think about who's going to be successful or not, it's going to be continuity, continuity, and continuity. You know, when you think about the teams that are returning their quarterback, their play caller, it's just a massive advantage. And let's look at the NFC East guys. You know, you talk about guys like Joe Judge. He's never been a head coach before, and now all of a sudden, you know, Daniel Jones has never taken a snap with him. You don't know protections or ways that certain nuances of your offense are going to run. And it's going to take a while. And you think about Washington and Dallas, all those teams will have growing pains. Now, you could say with Dallas, well, they're going to be returning Kellen Moore, but they still have a new head coach in Mike McCarthy. He's never been in a meeting physically with Dak Prescott. That's unbelievable. So you think about that division, Philadelphia is light years ahead of those other three teams from a continuity standpoint. So especially early on, I think the teams with those advantages will have a huge, huge advantage over those teams that are going to be truly learning on the fly.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be something, and we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
I mean, that's all we can say at this point. Yep. Mike, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it.
Well, start with Jamal Adams. Yeah. I mean, you see both sides of it. I mean, the haul that the Jets got, we can look at the pluses, you know, the both sides of the coin, I guess we could say. The haul is incredible. We've seen in the last few years, Khalil Mack go for two first-rounders. Laremy Tunsil go for two first-rounders. Jalen Ramsey go for two first-rounders. Now you have Jamal Adams. So the haul coming back to the Jets. Jet fans, if you were going to lose the best player on your team, you could say, okay, we got that. We got some draft picks as well. We got a player. Again, young player McDougal was fifth on the Seattle team in tackles last year. The other side of that is, unfortunately for the Jets, as we mentioned when we were talking to Mike Tannenbaum, they haven't drafted very well.
No.
I mean, it's like the Browns had all those picks, right, the first round that they had, but the only rookie they've had go to the second contract before Myles Garrett was Joe Hayden back in 2010. So you can have all the assets you want, but if you can't do anything right with them, what good does it do you? So really the pressure is on them, and they're probably not going to be very high picks either. So that's just looking at both sides of the coin for me from the Jets side of it.
Yeah, from the Jets side, listen, if you're going to just grade, and like this is all we can do in these situations, it's the same thing that happens around the draft, is you grade the transaction. If we're going purely off the transaction, what the Jets got in their situation is a win
for
them.
Fantastic.
That's
question.
The win for them. Yes. On paper, to be able to say you pulled two first rounders from a disgruntled player who had made it known to you and everybody else he didn't want to be there, that's an act of God. You were able to pull that off. The problem is, and this is really how much you trust Joe Douglas from here on out. Well, it's tied to one thing more important than that for both teams, but for the Jets and the sake of this deal, it's tied to some extent, how much you trust Joe Douglas going forward in all this, because he's the only difference you have between who you've been and what you potentially think you are with these two first-round picks going forward, because what you've been is still the Jets. Like, at the end of the day, in all of this situation, you can dress all this up, and we can talk about what the picks could potentially mean on this, but I can put 22s in a tin on some busted Acura, and it's still a busted Acura. And in this situation, you're still the Jets in all of this.
Look, historically, you are 100% right. But Joe Douglas wasn't there for any of that history.
Oh, I get it, and that's what I'm saying. If you think Joe Douglas is going to be the thing that delivers you to the promised land, then congratulations. But it seems like this situation is a symptom of the leadership problems that the Jets have as an organization, and we've seen that at all levels.
I was about to say, there's another level to that.
And Trey, we said that you're right, it isn't Joe Douglas, but how many different iterations of the Browns front office did we have
you're
where
right.
that happened?
Now,
I'm sorry to compare the two, but you haven't done anything with the pick, so we're still waiting, right?
I guess here's what I would say, and I'm glad Mike Tannenbaum brought up that name. Ashton Davis, I thought, was a fascinating pick by the Jets in the draft. The kid out of Cal who hadn't played much football. He's really interesting. But if you're going on this trade, and then you go on what we think we did in the draft, they got Mekhi Becton, which was a very good pick. They got Denzel Mims, a first-round wide receiver grade in the second round. They got Ashton Davis. I thought, listen, we'll find out. But I thought that Joe Douglas did a really nice job in the draft. A really nice job.
I agree with that. Yeah. I absolutely agree. So if that bodes to what he can do with these picks, like you said, on paper, it is an absolute win.
On paper, it's an absolute win. And none of those things matter unless Sam Darnold goes out there. Let's put it this way. You need a definitive answer one way or the other on Sam Darnold
without
this year.
Question.
It needs to be 16-0 or 0-16 for him, meaning you need him to go out there and show you, this is our franchise quarterback. Let's start looking at extending him next offseason. Or he needs to play so bad that if things go sideways, and if he plays bad enough, Adam Gase is probably not going to be long for this world there. You have an easier time handing your next coach options, as opposed to if you sit around and go in the middle ground where Sam Darnold continues to look like super talented player who's got a bunch of problems going forward, then you muddy a situation that is all predicated on him.
And then on the Seattle side, I try to find both sides of the coin, because you're getting one of the best safeties, if not the best safety in the game, going to play for your team, which is always a good thing, right?
Yeah.
But as I mentioned when Mike was on, you're going to a team that has made a pretty good living on making lower-round draft picks great defensive backs, where you didn't have to spend a lot of money. Now, they have the cap space to do it, to get it all done if they want to. Obviously, the biggest salary out there is Russell Wilson. They don't have a lot of, I don't believe, it's off the top of my head, a lot of big money players on big money players on that team. But they're gonna pay a big-time premium for Jamal Adams. There's no doubt about it. And I guess on the positive side, if he can come in and he can in some way contain George Kittle and get Seattle where they want to go, then obviously it's all worth it, because that's what Kansas City needed to stop Gronk, right? They couldn't stop Gronk when they had Eric Berry. Now, when Tyrann Mathieu came there, Gronk was done. But, I mean, Tyrann Mathieu certainly helped. I believe he was done at that point.
Yeah.
Gronk was. Tyrann Mathieu came in and did a great job for Kansas City. So, Jamal Adams, you expect that as well. But don't expect the Earl Thomas. Expect more of the Cam Chancellor, a guy
correct.
That's going to play closer to the line of scrimmage, like he's mostly done with the Jets.
Yeah, this is, again, and I was talking to Mina Kimes and Dan Orlovsky about this yesterday, and the general consensus was it's kind of the same for both teams in that it really only matters what happens with the quarterback. Like, we can talk about the Seahawks being in a Super Bowl window and this being something that pushes them across the line, but if the Seahawks are still going to operate their offense like they're in the Stone Age.
Yeah, see, I'm with you. I don't think that Jamal Adams is the difference whether or not they get there.
Well, but what he can do is he can stop at least in their conference to get where they want to go if he can be the guy that contained George Kittle. That's what you do. Man, I remember way back in the day, Fritz Schirmer, the late, great Fritz Schirmer, one of the great D coordinators of all time, when he was with D coordinator of Green Bay, they drafted, when receivers started getting bigger, they were drafting specifically to stop these great receivers that were in the division. And here you could see, we need a guy that can take away the best or one of the best tight ends in the league. And we're going to pay big time for him. Now, Jamal's going to bring more than that. I get it. You know, he's excellent against the run. He's a great blitzer. He's not a great cover guy, but he can be a guy that you can say, here, you're the big guy. You got to go on George Kittle, and you got to try and slow that guy down.
I think he's a better man guy. Like, he's not going to do what Earl Thomas did for that defense. No one else is going to do. Rover in the middle of the field, that is not going to be Jamal Adams' life on this.
No.
The one thing I will say, and it counts for something, is people talk about intangibles, and they use it as a throwaway to excuse everything else. Jamal Adams has the strength that we've all documented, and as far as we have seen from the outside, and as far as I've heard from anyone who's talked to him, that seems like the perfect Seahawks defense player. Like, when you think of what the Legion of Boom was with, like, a general, like, ethos and what they stood for and the kind of leadership they were for that team, you put Jamal Adams on a defense with Bobby Wagner already there, and you've got the makings of culturally something that fits perfectly in that situation. And so, provided your quarterback does the things he does, even if there's some regression, and even if Jamal Adams isn't posting like 4 and 5 sacks a year as a safety, which has got to be pretty tough to sustain, he fits really well what they've always tried to be about, which is guys that might not fit everywhere being your Swiss Army knife and just throwing 1,000 of those knives at your ball carrier every single time.
No, you're 100% right. He is a perfect fit for Seattle. But going back to the other side of it and Sam Darnold with the Jets, they went 6-2 down the stretch of the season. And over that stretch of the season, he had 13 touchdown throws against only 4 interceptions. I get it that Jets players are probably pretty ticked off right now, and a lot of them, I heard Manish Mehta from the New York Daily News, who had that sit-down with Jamal Adams last week before the trade. He was on ESPN Radio basically saying Jamal Adams certainly wasn't the only guy that felt that way about Adam Gase, and you know they're wondering if he's a leader, and all that is true. But the 6-2 thing matters more than anything else. And if Sam Darnold can play the way he played down the stretch of last season, whether or not Jamal Adams is there, like much in the same way that I'm with you, Jamal Adams isn't going to be the difference whether or not Seattle makes it to the Super Bowl or not. It's going to be Russell Wilson. If Sam Darnold continues on this trajectory, all those people that have doubts aren't going to care if those results still matter.
I'll be very interested to see who do they play down the stretch there, because we went through a similar thing. Now, it's apples to oranges because Baker Mayfield had a ton of other things change around him leading up to it, but we saw Baker and the Browns have a ton of success down the stretch of a rookie season that came in games that didn't count for much against teams that weren't playing for much.
Well, Buffalo was one, but I think they needed that win to get into the postseason They'd gotten into the postseason. There was something still on the line, I believe, that last week of the season. They played Pittsburgh, who was trying to get in. They lost to Baltimore. Miami was very scrappy down the stretch of the season. They took down New England, and they basically gave home field advantage to the Kansas City Chiefs.
But I guess, I mean, we're trying to pump up wins against the Dolphins, a Ben Roethlisberger-less Steelers team that would have, I guess, made the expanded playoffs, but still was a shell of themselves.
No question. I'm just saying he played pretty well down the stretch of the season. I'm really curious, especially with getting Denzel Mims and everything else, and Mekhi back then there to help him protect him a little bit more. I'm a little more optimistic on this Jets team with Sam Darnold.
I hope so, because the worst thing he could be is pretty well.
No, that's fair. No, you're 100%. He needs to be what they drafted him to be in 2018.
Weapons, to help him out offensively.
Yeah, Golic and Wingo brought to you by Blue Emu. Maximum pain relief works fast, and you won't stink from the Blue Emu. It's pharmacist recommended. Odor-free pain relief for muscle pain, backs, aches, strains, sprains, or even arthritis. There is no stinging or burning involved. It's simple pain relief. Blue Emu maximum pain relief works fast, and you won't stink from the Blue Emu. Coming up next, somebody who was more desperate for wings than Tommy Callahan, who wanted wingy. We'll get to that next.
Wow.
And we did some really deep research on the story. Golic and Wingo on a Monday morning.